This episode of WDW Today is brought to you by Simple Contacts. And a lot of us wear glasses here, but maybe one of us. One of us? One of us wears glasses. No, let's cut. Start over. All right. This episode of WDW Today is brought to you by Simple Contacts, an easy and convenient way to renew your contact lens prescriptions or reorder your contacts from anywhere within minutes. Matt Lott is going to be on a little bit later. You're going to talk about this.
I am.
Yeah, because you've experienced Simple
Contacts. I've done it.
You can get $30 off your contact lenses by visiting simplecontacts.com/WDW and use the promo code WDW. And now, on with the show.
Bringing the world to your world. This is WDW Today.
Wednesday, November 1st, 2017, and this is episode 1587 of WDW Today. I'm Logan Seculo.
I'm Terry Weaver.
Feel free, guest.
I'm McNair Wilson.
Yeah.
Hi.
And Matt Lott is
I'm
here.
I'm Matt Lott.
And Will's going to be joining us here in a second. Grease is out for the day, it seems like, though he's staring at me right now. And McNair's joining us today, and we want to spend the day talking a little bit to him. If you don't know who he is, you should have watched our Patreon live show, and that was you were a Disney Imagineer and sort of what a lot of people think of as a pretty golden age of Walt Disney World when it comes to this creation of Hollywood Studios, what's now Hollywood Studios, what is now Disney Springs. Don't you love all of the new names?
Of course not.
Yeah, as you're scowling at me for even saying that. But look, the people online will go after me.
The Rose Van and their name still dies eventually.
There you go. That's very uplifting. I like that. It makes me feel good about
That's
doing
why
the show.
I'm here.
Oh, man. Well, we wanted to talk to you a little bit about your work, your career, your book. Terry's got a new book that comes out, what, 2 days?
Yeah, 2 days.
If you were listening to this, it comes out Friday. Do you have them? Have you felt them yet?
I haven't felt them yet. They're supposedly on the way.
They're like an iPhone. Like they're maybe out for shipment. You're just not sure.
Yes, exactly.
Because that's how I feel like I got the iPhone, the X.
Yeah.
And I feel like, it's going to be there on Friday. I'm like, it's already Wednesday. I haven't gotten that shipping notification yet.
China. And then just
overnighted from China.
And then they just appear.
Yeah. So with that being said, though, we want to talk a little bit about that. I did want to say, though, first, Terry, people asked us to talk about it. Have you seen any of the stuff that they've announced for Christmas that came out the last few days, like the projection show?
Oh, the projection show on
your baby.
On the Tower of Terror.
Tower of Terror has now turned into the Toy Story Tower of Funland.
Makes sense to me.
Yeah.
You know what? I have seen a lot of the footage from they do some of the casual projection. You know, they do Star Wars is what it is.
Star Wars in Paris.
Star Wars in Paris.
And it is amazing.
It looks absolutely
amazing. It is good, yeah.
And friend of the show helped create that. I'm sure he helped this one, so I don't want to disparage it too much. But when I do see the Tower of Terror as the Toy Story toy box, it's a little off-putting.
And so it's 20 minutes of Toy Story twice a night, and the rest of the time it's what it is.
Yeah. Well, no, I think is it four shows? I think it's four shows that are going to be happening. Is it Olaf show? Olaf takes over the Tower of Terror.
Do you want to build it?
Yeah.
Elevator?
Yeah, exactly. And I'm cool with I love the projection technology. I think it's really neat. Mm-hmm. The show they have running right now on the Chinese theater is beautiful. And I really am, and it also celebrates the live action Disney history, which I'm obviously a huge fan of, from the 50s kind of onward. And I really enjoy that they're doing that. But there is a bit where it's like, oh yeah, so here's the four shows. It's the light show will tell a story with moving billboards featuring Disney characters, and the Tower of Terror will bring to life this character's stories. And so you have Mickey and Minnie reminiscing about a hometown Christmas as the scene shifts into a romanticized Norman Rockwell-inspired town, starting in black and white and before slowly changing into color. So that's the first one.
My first concern,
all right,
is they're doing four. The reason why they're doing this, obviously, because right now the Osborne lights would be on cranes. So what's amazing about the Osborne lights is you'll literally have 4,000, 5,000 people standing in the middle of the streets doing nothing.
The back lot.
And so now
No backlot.
There's nowhere. Right. All of these people are still flooding the Orlando for Christmas. Now there's nowhere for them to go. So now we're going to have them do four different shows.
Right. On a pretty crowded street.
On a crowded street.
I mean, yeah, because you're heading towards two giant attractions. And so then there's, we'll move on to the next show, which is the Toy Story characters, which is one we've seen that says the Hollywood Toy Hotel, which, what? And it is the Toy Story characters guessing which new toys are coming this Christmas as the scene becomes covered in a holiday wrapping paper. So you will see the Tower of Terror covered. It reminds me of when they made the castle, the big pink cake. It's
the worst.
See, like I was a kid and I remember going and being like, what? Even at like, so that had to been what? We're now at 45, 46.
Uh-huh.
So I was like, I was, you know, 10, 11, something like that. And I remember being like, yeah, there's something, something off about this castle cake. One of my friends has a piece of it. So I was like, that's a collectible?
If only there was a big metal sphere in front of it with motorcycles swirling around.
You were talking about this at lunch. And at one time, is it at Disneyland or at Disney World?
Disneyland.
At Disneyland.
Insisted that there be a new e-attraction every year. Well, there's just no way. And the best of all possible worlds, it's 3 years from initial concept to opening a new attraction. And to push that every year. And then the landmass wasn't there. And so Disney would do overlays. They did Country Fair. They did, during the downtime. They did circus. And they would always find some big, wonderful thing to put in the hub.
Yep.
And one year it was this big metal ball that two fellows from, some circus would ride around their motorcycles in three or four times. And the attraction was called the Sphere of Death. Ladies and gentlemen, in front of the hub, coming up in 15 minutes, the Sphere of Death. And then
not during like a Halloween season, nothing, just the Sphere of Death, which a lot of us have seen around, that. Putting, and it is impressive if you're at a fair or you're at a...
So Tony Baxter, who was put on this world to stop such nonsense, said, let's put something there that they can't move, and came up with the idea of the partner statue of Walt and Mickey, and it's perfect.
Yeah, and I love that. I'm telling you this at lunch. Like, I love that's the origin story of the partner statue, not... we wanted to honor, Walt's never really, we were afraid people forgetting that this was a real human and all that. And there is some of that.
They talked for years about something honoring Walt because Walt would never let them do that.
Right.
That conversation came out of me sharing that if you look at a lot of the art and images throughout the park, some of the faces are fellow Imagineers, the old guys, especially in Hall of Presidents lobby, all those old diplomats. And but Walt would say, don't use my face, don't use my face. Not for a pirate, not for nothing. And so they always wanted to do something honoring Walt in the parks. What would it be? And the, kind of the perfect storm of answering that question and putting a stop to all the other junk. Can I say junk on the radio?
Yeah, I think that's fine.
I had a better word, but Harry Truman took it. Anyway. So and it's delightful. And that led, of course, to the Roy Disney and Days, Minnie.
Now every park you go to has the partner statue staring at you. So, and of course on the back lot at Disney, in California, they have the partner statue there as well, which is really neat. But I love the favorite part is that this was very much what seems to be the stories that you tell us, and have that it was as much a problem solving, creation as it was it's very nice.
they really would have done the partner statue sooner, but there was no right place for it. Uh-huh. That didn't feel like an afterthought, an off in the corner.
And I think it's become so iconic that I think people maybe forget that it wasn't there at one point. Like, it's just part of what exists.
There were more years of Disneyland without that than there have been with it.
Yeah, but it's so just far. It's there. It's like in your head. It's something
it's
that's there.
Not moving.
So McNair and I were
3,000.
We're in Cincinnati last
week.
Like
a wrestling ring.
And coming back, and I heard a story that I'm like, you've got to tell this story on WDW today because it's crazy. And I had no, I've known McNair. We first met in the 90s. Right. So I've known him a while. And I never.
1890s.
Should we finish the four?
We're not done with the
let's
four.
Let's finish the four, and then we're going to get to the story time.
Sorry. I think I lost. Maybe
I want to hear some thoughts because this next one, Terry, you're going to like. And that is projected on the Hollywood Tower of Terror is the Swedish Chef from the Muppets. It just says, the Swedish chef from the Muppets babbling as only he can while the scene turns into a giant gingerbread house.
They make a gingerbread.
It'll be fun.
And then the elevator.
And finally, and by the way, I'm reading this off of Slash Film, but I'm pretty sure this is from the Disney site. Yeah, it is from the Disney site. And finally, Olaf pinning over pining over his holiday with an iconic music plays with what? And finally, Olaf pining over his holiday wish as iconic music plays and the scene freezes over into a frozen winter wonderland complete with dancing aurora borealis lights and projected falling snow. So that one, that's going all out. They're like, we're going celebration on this thing. There's going to be snow. There's going to be leaves.
Or aurora borealis. Northern lights.
You want to drop an elevator.
Yeah, that's what I wonder. Like,
are you in the ride? And it's like...
Right, because it's, let's say these shows are at most probably 5 minutes. They're probably short. I doubt these are long things.
I imagine they're like the Tree Awakenings, maybe, like in Animal Kingdom.
Right, yeah. So that's, you're talking maybe collectively this is 20 minutes of show. Maybe, let's say, half an hour. Okay, but is this running like what? Do we know whether it's running? I have to look. Is it running like once a night? Is it running every?
If it's short, it could be hourly.
Yeah, and it could be running every 5 minutes.
Yeah,
you know, with breaks in between, and it's pretty. That's pretty.
I'm getting claustrophobic right now, just at the thought of standing on Hollywood Boulevard with, you know, 9,000 of my best friends who were one trying to watch the show, two trying to get to Fantasmic.
Yeah.
Or trying, you know, I mean,
McNair's favorite. Why do you hate Fantasmic?
Where's the word come from? Break it down.
Okay. What, of Fantasmic?
Yeah, what's the suffix?
help me out here.
You didn't want to ask this question.
That's the wrong question.
We'll talk about it off air.
Okay.
And I explained it to Eisner. Like, well, here's the deal. Disney is about telling stories. Fantasmic is just throws everything but the kitchen sink. That there's not a kitchen sink in that show is a crime. Because everything else in the world is there. There's no story. Do a story. And then next year, do a different story.
Yeah.
You've got this big, beautiful outdoor space. And it's Pocahontas meets Pimba and Kumba and Dingy and Inch. And it doesn't work.
Some of those were right.
It's the Disney Entertainment guys go to a convention and buy all the new special effects and put them in one place.
Yeah.
I just think it's... Lousy show.
Yeah. I mean, I think that obviously there's a lot of people that do go to the show. I know a lot of you guys listening do like it, but I don't necessarily disagree because it's not something that I have been to in years. I've been to it, you know, once.
I've never been.
I've been once in the last decade. Here's I went to Disneyland testing. Once.
That's when they first did it at Disneyland, I was there with some college professors giving them my Behind the Dreams tour. And they had spent unbelievable amount of money putting in these hidden light poles and everything else. And I said, we're going to watch this, and then we're going to go watch the fireworks and Tinkerbell flying. And I want to time the applause. The applause for Fantasmic was 4 seconds. The applause for Tinkerbell was 12.
So one 12
effect. Is a lot. Yeah. I mean, look at your watch and clap for 12 seconds.
That's a lot.
It's a lot. And they've been doing Tinkerbell since I worked at Disneyland in high school in the 60s.
Mm-hmm.
And she was 70 years old.
That's pretty rad.
That was when she used to land. Did she land on Tom Sawyer Island?
Yeah.
Into a mattress?
Into two mattresses and four very large guys. Now it's the mattresses are bigger than the guys.
I've seen some footage of a, like when they used to do a New Year's where King Baby would fly. Like the, have you ever seen that Baby New Year would fly? Not King Baby. So I guess there's footage you can watch of like the guy who they had be Baby New Year who's just mad, screaming, yelling. They did not.
I just think Fantasmic, given the facility they've got for it, is a missed opportunity to do something quite wonderful. Cool. So that's all.
I've heard you rumbling back there, so I was just curious.
Next cue card, please.
Yes, next. All right, let's take a quick break. Let's once again give you a little more details about our new friends, Simple Contacts. Now, Matt, I don't wear contacts, but you do.
I do, and every year you get to this point where you start facing a little dread about having to reorder your prescription because you have to go to the office and sit there for years. And then, luckily... stumbled upon Simple Contacts, and it's really just a simple process. They have an app, they have a website, you get on there, make it happen.
They even have like a vision test on their website.
Yeah, the vision test is also only like $20.
Yeah. Now they want to say the vision test isn't a replacement for your periodic full eye health exam, but it's pretty rad they can even do that.
Yes.
And as someone who doesn't wear contacts, that makes me go, maybe it's worth it.
The convenience is worth it.
Kind of a trademark, but maybe I'll try it. Now, Simple Contacts offers an amazing selection of with every brand of lenses, and their prices are hard to beat. The eye exam, like you said, just $20, and they offer free shipping. Best of all, our listeners get $30 off their first Simple Contacts order by going to simplecontacts.com/WDW and using that promo code WDW. You've used it though? Have you gotten your Simple Contacts?
I got them. They came in the mail. Everything was great.
I mean, your eyes look beautiful. So
thank you.
I can say you didn't get anything crazy. You weren't like cat eyes.
No. There they are.
Meow.
Freaked me out there. But it's okay. I don't know if they offer those.
Not
that I saw.
I got my good, normal prescription contacts seeing wonderfully. I can see through walls. I don't know what happened.
Okay.
It's cool.
We can't endorse that. That's not going to happen to everyone. But you should check them out. Again, that's simplecontacts.com/WDW with the promo code WDW at checkout. Give it a try. Thank me later. Also, they are HSA health savings account dollars. May be used with Simple Contacts before the dollars expire at the end of the year. So you want to make sure you take a look at them now. They got convenience. Helps you with the time, because you told me the time is crazy fast.
Crazy fast.
They have licensed ophthalmologists that review every exam carefully to make sure your eyes look healthy. So when you're doing that exam, lots of choices, as I said. They do have colored lenses. So who knows? Cat eyes? Maybe an option. I'm not sure. I'll have to look that up to see. And of course, there is a big cost savings. The exam's only $20. Compare that to an appointment without insurance. It could cost you $150, more than that even. And standard shipping is free, and contacts are priced competitively. Make sure to take a look one more time, simplecontacts.com/WDW. Use that promo code WDW, because not only do you get to save dollars, it also tells them you heard about it right here. Right, Matt?
Keep it simple.
Meow.
Back to the making the Tower of Terror.
It is just like...
We'll know in 3 days. The thing is, like, when this thing starts, it opens. Christmas begins November, 8th.
Yeah, I'm just...
So we have this weekend ends Halloween, and it is one thing I would like to do. I've always said I'd like to do it, never done it, which is I'd like to go for the final night of Halloween and stay through the week where it becomes Christmas.
Mm-hmm.
It just seems like it would just be fun to watch the transformation. You don't get to see a lot of it, because a lot of it happens overnight.
Right.
But even just visually being like, this
that
is
That would
crazy.
Be a fun documentary, actually, to yeah. film the transformation.
Yeah. Away. Yeah, they've showed, I've seen, some time lapse, whatever, but I'd like to see real.
Like, watch it go down.
Yeah. Yeah, because, a lot of that stuff happens overnight. A lot of that stuff happens, especially in the parks. And it's impressive that it goes. I mean, I think there may be a couple days lag where it goes from Halloween, a little bit of Christmas, and then by the end of the week, it's full blown. Mm-hmm.
And when I was a kid working there in Disneyland, I was the first Geppetto with a walk-around Pinocchio puppet for the parade. The parks were closed Mondays and Tuesdays back then.
Right.
And so they would do the transformation those 2 days. And as I'd fly down, I was living in San Jose, fly down for rehearsals, and just be our little Pinocchio squad. And we'd spend an hour on Main Street and then, boom. So you'd get to see it evolve over the course of a couple of weeks.
That's pretty awesome. Now, Terry, you wanted to get to this story. So before we run out of time, I want you to probably, because I don't know how long the story is. This may go for an hour and a half. So where were you leading us?
So we last week on the show talked about Logan's barbecue experience.
Yes.
And I didn't know that McNair was actually 6 bits for when he was doing Streetnosphere, when you were still kind of working with Stack Theater even at the time. Yeah. You weren't an Imagineer yet, but you one night a week were 6 bits and Hoop-Dee-Doo the musical review.
Yeah, I was invited to do Hoop-Dee-Doo right after Sack got there. And so I started doing it, actually started rehearsal on my birthday, January 4th of 83. And the way Hoop-Dee-Doo is, because it's 3 shows a night, you don't do it all week. You have a one-night cast, a three-night cast.
You just get burnout.
And so I was the one-night cast, which made me the number one sub for 6 bits any other night.
Yeah, like a swing.
Which was
character.
Fun.
Yeah.
You'd get called in sometimes at 3 p.m. for the 5:30 show.
Right.
You didn't know. Usually they gave you a couple days warning. And there was a hard and fast rule that the people that ran the food part of Hoop-Dee-Doo Review, dinner theater show, for those of you that haven't been here in the Wild West Fort Wilderness area of Disney World.
Yep.
And then there was the show side, and the two didn't tell each other what to do. But we got a note one night on our call board in the dressing room. Very, very VIPs, 5:30 show, do a wonderful job. So I took the note and went to the food service manager. I said, so 5:30 is when you want the wonderful show. Or no, seven, middle show. 7:30 is when you want. At 5:39, we can do our usual pile of baloney, right? And do our usual crap.
Yeah.
She said, no, that's not what I meant. I said, well, that's what this note implies.
Right.
I said,
you're
we're
not going to go all out every time.
We're going to do the best show we can, not for VIPs, but for normal folks.
Yeah.
Moms and dads.
Paid the money to be there.
So we get out on stage. We come from the back like we've arrived. And there are two big tables in the middle of the room, bunch of kids and their dads, George Lucas and Steven Spielberg. And I'm thinking, I've done Sondheim, I've done Shakespeare, and these guys are going to see me in this wonderful old world piece of fluff.
Right.
Fortunately, Six-Bit Slocum has, of a show with six actors, has 30% of the dialogue. So I can pretty much steer that train any way I want to go. And did once in a while. But what we did, and they told us to leave them alone, as they did with all celebrities. I wouldn't do that. I would leave the celebrity alone.
With kids.
So London came over the year with their family. I'd play with their kids.
Yeah, they won.
So I went out and played with Spielberg and Lucas's kids. And at one point, Stevens grabbed my arm and says, thanks for giving us a good time. I don't remember his exact word, but just a quick, hey, thanks. And then later a note, hey, we've been chaperoned and shuttled and pushed through back doors all week. And you made us feel a part of what was going on. Thank you. Yeah. Just to the whole cast.
I think that was
great. That was the 80s. Fast forward, I'm living in the San Francisco Bay Area. I'm at my favorite restaurant in Berkeley, Chez Panisse, standing at the bar, having a glass of wine, talking to the manager, my buddy. Turn around, and as close as I am to my buddy Terry is George Lucas standing there. And he looks at me and says, hi, like we're friends. And I said, well, hi, George.
Is that what you expect from George Lucas?
No. I said, hi, George. He says, good to see you again. I said, where did you ever see me? And he goes, Disney World. Hope to do a review. I said, that's like 10 years ago. Yeah. What was I doing? He said, you were six, but you were great. And I told him, I said, and I knew that night I'd done Shakespeare, Sondheim. I'd never be in one of your movies because he says, it's a great show. You were great. And he says, and as I recall, my kids loved it too.
Yeah.
So
stuff sticks with him.
It works.
That's awesome. That's a great story.
Fun. Yeah. I still haven't been in one of his movies.
Well, he doesn't make a whole lot of them these days.
Daniel Craig gets to be a stormtrooper, and
that's
don't.
That's true. Well,
anyway, it was.
I don't think those are his calls anymore, sadly. Mm.
Yeah, I'm sure you're right.
I wish. There's part of me that when they were doing the Who's Going to Be the Episode 9, I was like, just give it to George, just because I want to see the internet explode. But also, it would have been fun.
Yeah, let him film the trailer.
Yeah, let's see what people do. Well, man, I feel like now you guys got to come up. I want to talk, since we're here, and we're here somewhat promoting your book here. There's a reason that McNair is here. You guys have been touring around doing conventions, and you kind of share the Disney Imagineering way of life, I guess, the way of creation. And that's part of the reason, like I said, that you're here in the studio. We don't really give any purpose. You're not here necessarily promoting. You have your book. You can get your books online and everything. But you're here also supporting Terry and what's been going on with your new venture.
Yeah, launching actually this Friday.
Yeah.
My book releases, Making Elephants Fly.
What's the name of the book?
Making Elephants Fly.
Remember what I said. I coach speakers, and the one thing all speakers say poorly is the name of their book and their own name.
Go fast.
I'm Terry Williams, Making Elephants Fly. And what I want to say is, and I say it slow and large, like it'll feel bad to you, but everybody will hear it.
My new book, Making Elephants Fly.
That's pretty good. Yeah. I like that. You're learning.
Yeah. Learning on the spot. So yeah, I just finished it. It seems like I've been writing this book since the dawn of time, which
been a minute.
It's been a minute. It's taken a,
couple
I mean,
years.
even just, last few weeks getting the details of, it's just pushing it out. And it's like moving, it's literally been like moving an elephant, but it's finally here. We're doing if you're a Nashville listener, we're doing a party this Friday night. You guys are welcome to come hang out and
where
it's in the lodge in Franklin. I've posted it as a million times all over social media. If you follow me on any of the internets, or if you're just a listener, would like to get the book, you can get it at makingelephantsfly.com. And so, McNair and I, we were in Cincinnati last week. We were teaching meeting planners how to be creative and had a great time. And so McNair was here yesterday teaching some of my wife's employees. And so we just figured, hey, we're in town, so it'd be fun to come by and do the show this week and let McNair tell some crazy
stories. Yeah, and we alluded to it in the Patreon. We talked obviously now about the projection side of it, but you were obviously one of the leads when it comes to heading up what became the Tower of Terror.
Right.
And I wanted to hold some of that back, but why don't you recap just a little and tell people, because it is obviously, it's a topic of controversy and somewhat, because it is one of those things that for a while people thought was on the chopping block in LA, gone, now Guardians. Which, again, don't hate me for my kids being, Guardians for the Halloween, but, come on, it's a good movie. But, it's always something that comes up as in a bit of a conversation, because it is a kind of a horror-based attraction right there on Hollywood Boulevard. And for you, what was your role in the initial, we've all heard, if you're a hardcore Disney fan, you're listening to this, you've heard some of the stuff you've mentioned before, that Mel Brooks was heavily involved, but what was your role?
I had a favorite group of guys that I put together, and we had done a concept and design for an attraction based on Airplane. Do you like Gladiator movies, son?
Yeah.
And presented to Jeffrey Stanup Katzenberg. He is standing up. Oh. And the Zucker brothers, and they loved it, but it was too expensive. So they remembered that. So they said, Michael Eisner called my boss, Marty Sklar, and said, have McNair get his team together, which I call the Knuckleheads. And we're sitting in Marty's private conference room, and Michael walked in with Mel Brooks. And we all said later, just, you know, Lord, kill us now, because after this, life is downhill.
Right, yeah.
Big time. And we're adding virtually a land, adding Sunset Boulevard to Disney MGM. And we needed the anchor store. We needed the Nordstrom, or as we call it in Imagineering, the weenie. Every land has one. And so we said, what would that be? Well, we literally watched every Mel Brooks movie and knew that not any one of those would be it,
yeah.
Including Spaceballs, which we voted as the worst movie ever made. And we, sorry for those who loved it.
Sorry.
Yeah, it edged out Princess Bride. Did I say that out loud? And but we said to Mel, we said, well—
making lots of friends here today.
the Disney MGM Studios is not like Universal, where they've done the Disneyland of movies. You ride the movies.
Right.
What we tried to do at Disney MGM Studios behind the scenes. Here's the how-to. So when you're in the Munchkin Village in the Great Movie Ride, you look up and you see the backdrop tied to the rafters and so on. So we said, let's use Young Frankenstein as our muse. Not sure what that is. So one day I said, you know, Mel, I'm on a team that's going to design this high-end Art Deco Hollywood Tower Hotel for the front end of this theme park. And the top 1% of the top 1% of Disney guests want something nicer. Let's give them that all suites. Fancy hotel.
An actual hotel at this point.
Yeah. Yep. Oh, yeah. And I said, what if one end of that was the original old burned out, haunted, whatever hotel? What would that be? And we just went around the table, the Kirk brothers and Jim Steinmeier and others who were in that team, brainstorming what that'd be. You get in the elevator, doesn't work. You get in the freight elevator, and you go up. And at one point, somebody says, and it shakes and shimmies at the top floor, and it comes out of the shaft and goes down the hall. We all giggled and laughed. And Mel says, you can do that. And I said, well, I know a guy. He said, you know a guy? I said, yeah, his name is Jack. At Engineer in Space Mountain. And the rule of thumb in the creative division, as if I always thought it was kind of redundant to have a creative division within Imagineering, but we did. They said, don't talk to engineers too soon in a concept development because they'll make it slow and safe and boring. I said, wait a minute, these guys make everything better. Yeah. They enable our wildness. So I literally went to lunch with these guys with a salt shaker, and I said, well, napkins, this and this and this, Mel Brooks, comes up, comes out of the shaft and goes down the hall. And just before he took a bite of his pastrami sandwich, he said, and then what? As if I'd asked him a month ago and they'd worked it out.
Yeah.
And he said, well, tell him, said the next genius next to him, tell him how it was done. Why don't we do this and this and this? And a little piece of copper in the floor and blah, blah, blah. Then he said, how are you going to get him down? I said, I didn't know I could get him out of the shaft. I said,
yeah.
Well, I'd like to do a roadrunner. I took the salt shaker off the edge of the table, hold it there for a minute, and I dropped the salt shaker. And he said, good. How tall is it going to be? And I said, well, it's very fancy and just 200-300 rooms, maybe 8-10 stories. Well, that's not scary. And I said, 12. So he said, and he hit me. He said, come on, theme park boy, think. And I said, Hollywood Horror Hotel. I said, 13 stories. So they said, tell you what, we'll build it as tall as we can without putting a stupid radar beacon
right,
on
the
top.
Beacon.
And we'll paint it to look 13 stories. So the Tower of Terror in Florida, taller than Cinderella's Castle, which is 189, Tower of Terror is 199, which is a foot below the limit without
the light on.
And they painted it to look 13 stories. For the longest time, they didn't build it because they weren't going to build the real hotel. And somebody looked at the rough drawings and said, this thing is huge. It'll look like its own place. If you look at an aerial photo, a Google map, you can see the way the hotel faces the park and the back end where Backlot Trail, you could still drop that hotel in there.
Yeah.
And the best part about that idea is it would nuke Fantasmic, but that's another conversation. Anyway, so they built it. And the rest is history. They did that, California, Paris, Tokyo, which is the biggest, has a different overlay, a different,
right.
You know, theme. And as I understand, the latest is that Paris will also become Guardians of the Galaxy.
Which is different. I've ridden the Guardians ride in California. I enjoyed it. I'll be honest. I enjoyed the ride a lot. But it's also not the Florida one. It doesn't have the, you know, go out, which is really the part that hits you hard is when you're on that ride. That's cool. Like, that's a great moment is when you actually go into the hallways. Now, it's just a bit of a drop ride.
I think that was an apt excuse, an excuse, a reason why to transform that ride.
Right.
Also, you've got a big chunk of parking lot
that
Pixar didn't use when they're going to do Pixar Land. They said to Lasseter, here's all the land we've got. And he took half of it and did Cars Land.
Yeah. Which is beautiful.
And could have done a much larger Pixar presence, but I think the Cars Land is fantastic.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. It's it's breathtaking when you're there, for sure. Well, that's interesting, man. As someone who's a fan of the history of it, who grew up there, who saw MGM Studios for what it was, you know, it's interesting to me that now, and some of that I'm sure is because right now there's nothing even in the Chinese theater as things have been changed, is if you now see on your app, if you look at your icons, whatever it is, the Tower of Terror is technically the icon of Disney's Hollywood Studios, or Disney Hollywood, whichever one it is. I always forget.
Because the Earful Tower is gone.
Because everything's gone. Mm-hmm. So the icon now is the Tower of Terror, which is pretty rad to be like, man, you were, you know, of those things when you think of the Tree of Life, you think of Spaceship Earth, Cinderella Castle, and now the Tower of Terror. Probably not something when you originally created thought, oh, yeah, this is going to be Disney's, you know, whenever they're marketing, come to the Tower of Terror.
And not today, but next time I'll tell you what it was before Tree of Life that was pretty spectacular.
Oh, well, we look forward to that on the next trip. Well, Terry, I lost my train of thought. I got so engrossed in that story.
I want to say,
Making Elephants Fly.
I don't get a nickel for this. I hope I get a free book. But I've read Making Elephants Fly, and it's very, very good.
I've read it as well. So
well worth the dive.
Yeah, go take a look at that.
Best, most inspiring book on creativity till my new one comes out.
Which is next week. Comes out November 10th.
It's a couple months. There's more Bondo needed than I thought, so.
Yeah, mm-hmm. And obviously it's definitely something for a Disney fan when you read it. It's good, and I think you'll enjoy it. You should check it. Take a look at it. Check it out. I can't wait to actually physically hold it.
Me neither.
That will be, that will feel real.
It'll feel like, wow.
It's done.
It's done.
It's done. No one's going to send you an email back and be like, sorry, the file failed. Can you resend it?
Can you resend the file?
Yeah. Oh, well. I appreciate you guys sitting in and talking to us a little bit about what's going on in your history there. Because I think we're seeing especially with Hollywood Studios, you know, your baby, and somewhat seeing a pretty drastic change in what that is going to look like in the next 24 months. But it's always good to look back and remember kind of a little bit what it was. Because when we grew up going there, I mean, it very much was a studio. It had that element to it. Whether you're going to see pro wrestling, whether you're going to see the Mickey Mouse Club or whatever was being produced. And now it's, you know.
You know, now I get a lot of Story Mania. I get a lot of questions. What do you think about the change of this and this? You know, people were worried about adding Johnny Depp to Pirates. I've been going to Disneyland since 1958. I still have the map I bought. It's never been folded. It's been signed by 20 Imagineers. And there's stuff on that didn't get built. And there's stuff on that did get built. The coming of this Haunted Mansion thing. Right. And I think by and large, more often than not, Imagineering has gotten it right on things they've changed, things they've gotten rid of, things they've added, subtracted.
Sure.
Give them a chance.
Oh, absolutely. And you always got to see what's next. And I'm obviously a huge fan of the properties they're putting in, even with Star Wars and those. This is the stuff I grew up on. So I'm excited for the future. But it definitely, when you walk in that park, it is a different feeling than it even was 2 or 3 years ago. Now, the Earful Tower, okay, fine for that. You know, it's something that I really enjoyed, but okay, it's fine. The Big Hat, I was fine with. But you got the Chinese theater, and we're seeing that. That was sort of the ending for me. When Great Movie Ride made its, you know, final bow, that's when I was like, okay, this is not the park necessarily I grew up with, for better or worse. And I think that it's important to kind of look back at the park that was, what do they say now in the movie magic? Like the Hollywood that was and was never. No, that never was and will always be. That's what they say before the movie magic thing. So they got a great group of people.
It's on a plaque.
Yeah. So there you go. All right. Well, I think that's going to wrap it up. Will, how you doing?
I'm good.
You've been busy. Been tweeting.
Had some things to do.
So Will will be there back next week, as well as the Grease.
I was out behind the woodshed giving the Grease a good shellacking. Mm. He deserved it.
That's why he's all shiny now.
Right. Yeah. I don't even want to address that. Kind of.
He was in trouble.
I got that.
We have corporal punishment here.
That's I didn't know we implemented that policy.
I just did. I was like, you know who really needs this?
The Grease.
The Grease needs it right now.
McNair has inspired me.
Yeah.
It's
a very creative way to punish Grease.
Well, Grease?
With a hickory stick.
I want people to know you actually.
I appreciate everything y'all do today.
You were here the whole time.
Go Dogs.
That's right, Go Dogs. That's right. If y'all are going to be in Atlanta in January, I'll be at the National Championship Games. You can find me there. There you go. I'll be in red. Well, I think that's going to do it for this week on WDW Today. Make sure to check out Terry's book, available now. No. Well, it's available. Pre-order now, but shipping in the next couple days.
Yes.
And it'll be available very shortly. So, and come out to the event in Nashville if you're in the area. And go see Will. Will has a book coming out.
Three of them, actually.
Making Barrels Dry. It's different.
It's just about draining the barrels, filling bottles of bourbon.
That's the subtext. Like, yeah. yours is making elephants fly. What's that?
Getting your dreams off the ground.
So Will's is
Making
barrels
in
dry.
Yeah.
It's very specific.
Yeah.
It's
a short tale. It's a short book. It's like literally just describes the quick process.
The process of making it a Kentucky straight bourbon.
Right. No, not the making it. Just the
de-barreling.
Bottling. Just the bottling process.
Okay. I would maybe read that.
Yeah.
Matt Lott, you got a new book?
I do. Making Squirrels Cry.
Oh.
Communication with the Animal Kingdom and What It Does for You. It's pretty cool.
Yeah.
I like that.
Thanks.
But is it go beyond squirrels just squirrels?
It's
not a metaphor.
It's squirrels mainly.
It's an analogy.
Some chipmunk work, but not a lot.
I did hear they're replacing the bird show at Animal Kingdom. And that's Flights of Wonder maybe no longer flying.
Well, I haven't seen that since about 2001.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. So maybe we could do a squirrel show.
Maybe so.
In its place.
We'll call it Flights of Blunder.
My new book is not fit in the theme today. Why?
Yeah. McNair's new book is
Casting Out Demons Using a Light Overhead Fly Rod.
There you go.
Oh, man, that's cool.
I like that one. That's
There's no title yet. It's the sequel to my brainstorming book, Hatch Brainstorming Secrets.
And that's available. People can pick that.
But it's the book based on my TED Talk, Recapturing Your Creative Spirit, which was a talk I created when teaching brainstorming to Disney executives, and they said, well, I'm not creative. And I thought, how do I convince them they are?
Very good. Take a look at that. We'll put the link in the show notes for everybody's book, but mainly Terry's and McNair's. I don't have a book. No one asked me. I have a new book coming out next year. It's, I don't know. I lost it. It was going to end and die. It was something scarier. What's the opposite of an elephant? A mouse. Making mice die is mine. So, making John Elefante fly.
Killing mice.
Yes.
All right. Well, that's going to do it for this week on WDW Today. I'm Logan Seculo.
I'm Will Haynes.
I'm Terry Weaver.
I'm McNair Wilson.
And I'm Matt Lott.
And we'll see you on the next show.